welcome. Welcome to meeting this morning. Members could be recorded the day we can say submission over effect in advance. We have submission sent to us from COSAD to SAMU, from IMATU, from Mr. Dewa, who came and presented orally yesterday, as well as Salga. The one we didn't deal with yesterday is it's just a one-pager from Mr. Chris Mkize, Chief Executive Officer of Utungulu Community Foundation. The letter basically expresses support for the intention in the bill, as he understands it, to professionalize, as he calls it, appoint people on merit, as he says in his letter of support for the bill, expressing concern that often people in the education sector were employed to take up senior positions, which shouldn't have been the case at all. So he's expressing both concerns at who gets employed often at that level, and claims that the country cannot be said to be lacking professionals as far as he's concerned, that this can always be found and given positions. That's the submission from my... This is... It's tabled A. Titled A. You probably have it in your documentation there. Some of the proposals yesterday included that the report that we received from the NETLEC process although in the top part of the document it's still called draft, but it's a final one, doesn't show any changes to the body of agreements reached in NETLAC, and so both Labour and the department presented to us yesterday their issues, including Salga as well, restated some of their views. In the consultations that I had with the Deputy Minister and representative of the Minister, we agreed that a lot of the issues that were raised, where there was agreement, especially about some of the formulations in the clauses of the bill, those will need to be put together so that we can manage that process. In other words, where there is clear agreement around those issues, that they can be formulated differently and so on. We are here today saying that we hope that that will be done, so that we then arrive at a situation where we can say that there is agreement about almost the entirety of the bill, except perhaps for one or two things, and then we will make our position known from there on. Only then will we then arrive at a position where, as different parties in the committee, will we then take positions around each of those clauses. We'll then systematically work. I thought today we should give an opportunity to members, having read the submissions, and if they have any other questions that they would like to pose, so that we handle those. The department is here, and so is the Deputy Minister arriving. Welcome. So that if there are issues that you would like to raise that weren't clear or that you think needs to be put across for our considerations, please do so. So that's the opportunity that members have now to do that. So you can either you look at some of the submissions that were given. Unfortunately, not every one of those stakeholders is here. But if there are questions that you want us to deal with the people who submitted, you can always reach them to get some idea of what's happening. Deputy Minister, there's your seat here.
Oh, yeah.
That was reserved for you. So that's my request for now, members, that I hear from you on which of those issues you would like us to proceed this morning. Issues that you have questions about, that you have comments on, raise them so that we can then work with those. The the judgment that was put across to us yesterday, department, do you have any comment on that today? Having slept on the staff, looked at it, since it was brought to your attention only yesterday. Do you have any comments that you'd like to make on that judgment today? Maybe you could start there.
From the submission, there was a submission which came from Mwandim Kriteka. Maybe then I managed to phone him to check exactly what was in what I wanted to tell us about the submission. But there was nothing which is not aligned with what we to call them. I spoke to him.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah.
Which submission is that? The one pager there.
Yeah, one pager.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, these are issues that have been attended to in the presentations that we received from the department as well about some of the intentions to improve some of the regulations here. Okay. James, you wanted to say something here?
Mr. Chair, there's quite a lot that we're interested in taking up. We thought the contribution of Salgo was very interesting. And one of the issues they raised was that of, on page 2 of their submission, micromanagement of municipal administration by political parties was identified as a threat to good governance. And the proposal to forbid municipal managers from being executive office holders, rather, of political parties. There was some evidence submitted yesterday that this should go across the board, not just be limited to municipal managers, but actually to be extended to all members of a municipal administration. And my take on this is that it's a very good idea. The scenario was put to us that you would have a municipal manager who is forbidden to be an office bearer in a political party, and you could have a junior in that person's department who was an office holder, and therefore the senior manager would be answerable politically to their junior. So I think it would be a very sound idea to look at spreading that prohibition on office holding across the administration.
Another comment? You do recall objections to that yesterday as well, eh? Because it was strenuously objected. But let's talk. It is an interesting idea. Let's hear. The Deputy Minister expressly suggested that it may not pass muster. And some who also felt that now you're taking it too far. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to which other issues you said there's quite a lot. Proceed.
Depends which way you want to go through them. Do you want to address them one by one, or do you want to...
Let's go, yes.
I don't have a comprehensive shopping list here. So.
What is comprehensive? You know you can't go there. You know that. You have experience now. You can't send
me now. Relatively.
Put across a reasonable number of those issues and let's debate them.
Right. That's what I pick up next. Just give me a minute, Mr. Chair.
That's okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, another one would be the issue of the rehabilitation of officials dismissed for municipalities, and whether or not they should be employed again, and the whole question of what offences should be involved, how the offences should be defined, and whether or not there should be a straight prohibition on re-employment, or whether there should merely be a rehabilitation period. I think that's worthy of discussion. The question too of the municipal managers appointing their own teams and what involvement councillors should have in that. I think that is another important one to look at. We tend to go with the belief that a municipal manager being held responsible for the performance of the administration should be the person who appoints certainly their own direct management team. And we feel there should be mechanisms to involve MMCs, for example, in the appointment of other officials in the department. But nevertheless, the municipal manager should have the predominant say. We also had a question on the position of contracts as envisaged by the legislation and as to whether or not this could hold, this be made retrospective to positions that are already, contracts that are already in force. Then there's a question of Section 57 contracts in its entirety. There is a move towards limiting those. I believe we should look carefully at the idea of eliminating contract municipal managers altogether in order to arrive at a professionalized municipal core of municipal civil servants. This legislation seems to be heading in that direction but doesn't really go all the way. We think it's worthwhile looking at taking it further. Is that across the board? Yeah. I'll look at it again.
In fact, let's tell you also, part of it comes not only from the department's own problem statement of what the problem is from local government as they presented to us. But we also, in the hearings on the ad hoc committee on service delivery, received a direct representation on that issue by the Organization of Engineers that suggested, in fact, that that is the way to go, that this five-year contract creates a problem, a disincentive for people to stay in their jobs. They can't look forward to renewal of contracts that they don't know will happen. And so on. So they choose to go elsewhere and so on. So the proposal
to remove that comes from those different parts of the route as well.
As I understand,
I'm misrepresenting the department here. And in the bill, yes, and that they called.
No, Honourable Chair, we are not. In fact, Honourable members will recall that I remember when I was in the city of Cape Town, one of the key issues that was raised was the issue of this contract employment, and the case is still before the courts, and the case problems was people are there for 5 years. In fact, they start looking for a job on the third year. Then you lose cases, everybody goes, then you've got people acting as if it's a polywood. So we're trying to avoid that and make sure that there's stability. Thank you.
Talk about the issue of retro. We taking the issues he's raised up. Of what are you avoiding, if we may ask the department directly, by not making this on implementation once the law is accepted, that from then onwards that be the case, the implementation of the law. Yes, explain that.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, I'll try, and I think my colleagues will support me. It's always difficult for purpose of implementation to do that, because currently we have got contracts that those people signed with the employers at the time. So you cannot just implement the law and then interrupt the contract, because it's a contract of employment between the employer and an employee. So all what you have to do for purpose of fairness and ensuring that you do not disturb or upset the contract of employment between the two in terms of IR or Labor Relations Act, allow that process to unfold until the contract expires. Then thereafter we can then make sure that this act applies. But at this point in time, let the old contract that has been signed by two parties to run its own race until it expires or it comes to an end. And for purpose of fairness, that's fine. But if you do it now, that can be challenged, and those MMs can win the case. And that's what we're trying to avoid, that you have a law that can be challenged, and then you lose before even you begin to implement it. Yes.
Thank you. So I think, leading to the issues that have been raised by my colleague here, is that this is going to have some serious legal implications to municipalities, because if they have to go into arbitration cases with individual managers who have signed contracts, municipalities will end up footing the bill in terms of legal costs as well as payments of the remaining part of contracts.
That's fair enough. I accept that. Just something else I do want to raise. Is it not likely or possible that we might see a rash of contracts being signed between now and when the legislation is implemented? And is there anything we can do about that?
Well, that's malice. Those things can be dealt with. I don't see why there should be a rush. There's the end of elections meant to prevent that precisely. Yeah. Generally, moratorium on employment of people at this time of the year, as we approach elections and so on, it would be crazy stuff to see here. Yes, Marty?
Chair, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They are interviewing for CFOs and all sorts of other positions, and they are busy signing contracts in some of the municipalities in Gauteng.
Yeah. So you think that they're going to be appointing ill-equipped, unprofessional, sub-A candidates? Is that what you're suggesting? Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, but I don't think that can be the basis for writing law, the argument that is being put forward, because an issue like that can be dealt with. So that shouldn't be used as a basis for an argument to change law or to rewrite law.
Let me hear it so that we give more.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You see, Chair, we're talking about the practical implementation of the law. And what we're saying is that we must make sure that all the measures are put in place to ensure that we're able to implement the law without being litigated, and that's what we're talking about. But for institutions to continue appointing people, I don't think that there's something wrong with that. And unless we are suspicious and we are of the view that what people are doing is wrong. But unfortunately, you can only confirm suspicion if you're part of the process. And it will be very difficult for us actually to intervene in the process, because we're already encouraging people to ensure that all the critical positions are filled and are filled with competent people. But of course, if that does happen, all what you're saying in the law, because our law is pushing performance, all what you're encouraging that everything must be done according to the performance-based processes. So, of course, the responsibility will be with the new MMs to ensure that their municipalities function. And if the municipality does not function accordingly, we have to blame the MMs and make sure that we discipline them for not steering the ship to move. So those are some of the issues, but I don't think that if we apply the law now, it will affect everybody, even including those that are not appointing people. Then it can create a nightmare for all of us. My view is that let's go with the move that we implement the law and we link it to the contracts of those people, because you don't want it to interfere with the contracts. And most of these MMs, they've got individual contracts. If you have checked how you terminate, how you arbitrate, those are different things. Unlike an ordinary employee in the municipality that is managed in terms of the agreements of the bargaining council. So it makes it a little bit complicated to deal with it. My suggestion would be at least let's leave that one. Those in counting probably they are trying to fill the positions as well suggested. Thank you.
Now let me ask you a question. Matt, you're an ex-councillor. On what basis would we stop them doing so?
The whole process was that each mayor and his team will be a team of the municipal manager and a new contracted individual that they're going to be working with for their term of office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are in the instance where a municipality is now negotiating a contract for the CFO. Mm-hmm. Before the start of the new process, while the finances will be not changing and the administration and everything will be there, why would the outgoing MM, whose contract is finishing within the next 6 months, be negotiating for new contracts for the new incoming team?
What does the law say currently about those matters? Would that be valid? Yes, Honorable Curry?
I think we should be guided by, instead of having an endless theoretical discussion, it's a simple legal question. And Fani is the most experienced lawyer here that I know, and maybe the state law advisor replies. As I understand it, Comrade Chair, you know, you can't, I'm not a lawyer, but having served on this committee for 10 years, it's a matter of deep regret to me that no university has issued me an honorary PhD in law. It's also the stereotype, for those of you who don't know, of Indians in the ANC, we're invariably lawyers. So a lot of people do think I'm a lawyer, and from this here, remind me that I will tell you about a certain story, which I can't say here in this meeting, about how I was misunderstood to be a lawyer. But firstly, as I understand it here, in the era that I was in this committee, you couldn't do it for absolutely anything. I don't remember a single piece of law that we passed between 94 and 2004, which applied retrospectively. And Ferret and Fani and Tim all said to us, no, you can't do it. So instead of having an endless discussion, let's ask the state law advisor and the department whether it can be done. It can't, to the best of my knowledge, the first point. The second point is, I don't think people can have their cake and eat it. On the one hand, people will say, do not interfere in the autonomy of local government. In fact, the same person that says that the minister is unduly intrusive, we can debate that, is also saying, please do something when municipalities are doing these things. We gave them the right to appoint CFOs. My understanding, Chair, is, unless I'm wrong, the law says that municipal managers can be appointed at any time up to a period of 5 years, except that when they're appointed midterm or whatever, their term of office comes to an end a year after the date of the election. So any municipal manager appointed now, at most the person would be able to stay in the position till around May, June next year. Now most people won't accept a 13-month, 15-month contract. As far as CFOs go, my understanding is that there's no prohibition. At most, what we can do as COGTA is at MINMEC, we can raise this issue, ask the provinces to send out two MECs letters. We can even do it now. We can also ask CELGA to send out letters. And as Parliament, you can send out letters. So it's inappropriate to employ senior staff when the term of office of the current councillors and municipal managers come to an end. In the one case, around May, June, in the other case, at most, within a year. That's the most we can do, Comrade Chair. I don't think we can do anything else. As far as retrospectivity is concerned, maybe the lawyers can guide us.
Chairperson, I agree with what's just been said. There's no argument about it. The elections can't interfere with the administration. The municipalities are required to appoint competent staff. How can a municipality operate without a CFO because of an election? So it's only the municipal manager that's affected by the election, but not any of the other staff. That's my understanding. Well, that affects the constitutional rights of these people. There are contracts, valid contracts in place. We cannot interfere with those contracts by way of legislation. We can only, this legislation can only apply to contracts concluded after this legislation commences, not to contracts in existence when this legislation takes effect.
Justice Karim, don't worry. In the college that I run as the chancellor, your name is on the list. We're just finding it difficult to get support for the motion. Okay. The issue of let me jump the who appoints MMs and so on, and that process that you've raised, James, we'll come back to it. But the issue of rehabilitation, I think both the trade unions, I think maybe some especially, explicitly said it's better if things are much more clearer than vague, because if it's vague, then it runs the risk of victimizing people who shouldn't be victimized. Our intention in the legislation must be clearer about that, about the reality that they were painting, that often people have not been found guilty of anything. So the rehabilitation story is problematic in the sense, in the way in which it's currently phrased, that a person will be accepted after a rehabilitation period. There's a vagueness about it, the way it is right now, and that we need to be looking at it differently and so on. So that's the argument that they were raising, that it would be useful to come. James is raising it again here. You wanted to add to that? But
just an in-principle position, that if somebody is found guilty of, or even found guilty, should be found guilty of stealing public money, then there should be no rehabilitation. And that's an in-principle position. They should never be allowed to work for the public service again. However, you then hit the shoals of, well, what if they're not found guilty and they leave before they get they go through a process? If it is another kind of offence that doesn't involve the theft of public money, should they be allowed then to work somewhere else? Perhaps it's a personal clash. So all of that, but nevertheless, I just wanted to put the principal position that if somebody steals public money, they should never work for the public service again.
In the world of the media and writing, that it's always useful to accredit your sources. You were sitting quietly yesterday at the meeting when exactly the views you were expressing were being expressed here, probably. I'm just saying, it would be nice to say, as also argued by so-and-so yesterday.
Not argued as well as I have, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Okay. Yes, this is an issue that I thought was raised sharply yesterday. And so it's emerging again today. I think let's look at it and hear what you have to say. Mohammed Baba, welcome.
Thank you. Sorry, Chair. I've been stuck at the madness at the registration office.
Whose madness? Yours?
No, mine.
Oh, okay. Right.
Chair, can I just, judging from the inputs yesterday, I think we need to find a solution in three areas. There are three scenarios. The one is we need to define the offense which attracts the sanction. I think we must be clear on that. The second is the scenario that was raised by Samu yesterday, where for frivolous reasons people are brought through disciplinary processes. Defining the offense would assist. But there is another scenario where people, in anticipation of what the outcome is going to be, avoid the disciplinary and resign. I think we need to address that scenario. So if the sanction, or rather if the offense for which the person ought to have gone through a disciplinary is defined and then does not go to a disciplinary for opportunistic reasons, perhaps that scenario could be addressed. And then third is the period itself. Should we attach certain separate sanctions for separate offences? I'm just, those are some of the issues that were. But the one trick that people play is that they resign. So if we could bring in a clause, I'm just saying we explore the possibility of bringing in a clause where a person has ought to go to a disciplinary committee to have his conduct adjudicated upon and then avoids that by resigning. Perhaps that should attract a sanction as well, because then we need to go through that, because then people will, you'll just have willy-nilly resignations coming through.
One of the this is how we can best deal with the problem in a clearer manner by specifying the definition of the offense and the other instances where it behaves in that manner. What if at all the law can say and do about that? Because the other legitimate observation, and I think this one we must also speak to it as we talk about the process of constitution itself suggests that they may be deficient. So there might be a way in which this can be...
There is a way in which this may be tightened up so that you in advance avoid the having in the system people like that. I mean, the idea that I had the DM suggesting that it was it you or someone else suggesting that it might be an interesting database of for people that can be checked by recruiters or something like that. So, I mean, that's one of the ways that I had been mentioned yesterday. So that you are able to keep the system clean in terms of who it recruits into it. So you must find a way to do that. I would like us to just think and reflect around that. So don't go on.
No, thank you, Chair. And I think this is very interesting. Because here, Chair, we're talking about the cooling off period in between. And I do agree with the colleagues and the DM that we need to categorize the offenses. And our focus is more on gross misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
And we can actually do that. We do have an experience. What are those offenses and their nature? The challenge is around barring people who have not been brought before a hearing and been found guilty to say they cannot join the other municipalities. It's a matter that the person can go to court and argue and win the case. The issue is how do we then detect that? That's why one of the submissions yesterday was that why don't you make it as part of the elements when you advertise a post that the person should declare whether it's jumped before, was caught before, so that you know. But prior to that, the person is just left, and even as an employer, if a person resigns, you cannot charge that person because it's no longer part of your your staff, the contract of employment has been terminated. There's caseload. So our view is that how do you manage those people to avoid people jumping ship? But how do you then manage people who are no longer part, who are not in your in your organization? They remain candidates until they are employed, but all what you want to do is to make sure that people must diverge. Should you find out after they've been employed that a person jumped ship prior the hearing, probably then you can take action. The only people that we think that must be punished are people who have been found guilty, because there will be a record. But also what we are saying is that there should be a record, and of course we, as part of this process, we have been asking municipalities to give us the records of people that have been dismissed. Probably we need to strengthen up that particular process to make sure that anything that is done, even the people who have been suspended, currently the municipalities, when they suspend an MM, they suspend an MM and a SFO. That has been the trend now, but whether that information reaches our office with speed, I'm not sure, but those are some of the things, that information that should be given to us. But I think even the time frame must be given. You will recall, Chair, that during the, when we were discussing the issue of conflict of interest in the private sector and in public status, we raised that issue that there should be a cooling off period. Even in our time, we should be able to set a time frame, whether it's 2 years or 5 years, but if it's endless, you can be taken to court, because the person will say, no, but it's double jeopardy. I've been sitting at home. I don't have job security. My reputation is in tatters. And then there's no case law. And really, we can be tested and we may fail. So there should be some time frames so that we know that people, at least they have been rehabilitated and they still have that right, because they have got the right to apply for a job and be employed. But how do we manage that process, Chair? Thank you.
Comments? Yes, go ahead. The irony is that if you're looking at the public service, it's not really enough.
Right.
Because here we're dealing with different corporate entities. One municipality and another municipality is a different corporate entity. That's where the solution is.
Yeah.
But may bounce it off you, that would the solution lie in putting an obligation on provincial government to develop the database. So whenever a resignation takes place or an expulsion, there must be an obligation on the municipality to report it to the MEC's office, and perhaps the database would be run from there. I think national government would have a difficulty in running, and then the link between national government and the province would be through the MEC. I'm just counting that that would be a possible solution.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do want us to remember, that we are going to have to develop some report, so it doesn't have to come into the legislation. So some of the I liked one of the recommendations you were asking. That, in other words, by clarifying the problems that we want to deal with in a sharper manner, which dialogue the public hearings are doing. Is generating, is that it can produce additional recommendations that may not have been anticipated, that we then include in our report and can then engage with other stakeholders around this issue, including whatever the process is at that is looking at the public service legislation, because I'm told that's also in the offing and so on, so we must be mindful of the eventuality of that area. But in a sense, I'm just saying that we shouldn't feel restricted and be confined to what is in the law if the problem we are talking about is in this arena of what we are dealing with. So that kind of proposal may serve well there. You know what happened? No, it's because, we bumped into each other yesterday. That's what we
are. I very much like the suggestion that's been put forward there. If I could just add that such a database should also keep a record of people who leave while facing charges.
Let's get additional questions, comments.
Yes.
I'd just like to draw attention to Section 107 of the Systems Act.
Yeah.
In terms of that section, the minister can, by notice in the Gazette, require a municipality to furnish any information. So there is already a legal
feature
to use for this.
Okay.
It's already in the Systems Act, Section 107.
Yeah, what does it say again?
It says the minister may, by notice in the Gazette, require municipalities of any category or type specified in the notice, or any other kind described in the notice, to submit to a specified national organ of state such information concerning their affairs as may be required in the notice, either at regular intervals or within a period as may be specified.
Okay. That's a very interesting section you're quoting after yesterday's discussion about the degree and level of autonomy. You prepared well. That's a good one. I like it. Yeah. In other words, So, by request, this can be done to all municipalities, in fact. And isn't this some of the stuff that may be reported on in the Section 48 or 47 report?
But that's just on the performance.
Sorry?
That's a performance report.
Huh?
Yeah, that deals with performance, but when it comes to the issues that I talked about, the time you don't get that information, you have to dig, and that's why we have a challenge that we find that a municipality takes a decision to suspend a person today, you only hear after 6 months, and so on and so on, and yeah, these are issues that are creating problems on the ground. But if we can be specific, and then look for this information. I know the two areas in Limpopo where we had to be involved and chase people to say we need these records. Otherwise, we're not going to get that information. So I think if this one, we can just be specific and make sure that we get it. I think people will, because there's been a tendency that there's nothing wrong in the institutions. People, they play down this issue and focus more on performance. To say, you know, in terms of performance and service delivery is what we're doing, but this information hardly get it. So I think we may need to be specific, yes.
Okay. Right. Yes, ma'am. Just raise your voice, yeah.
Just to go to that report of the Delta
Bank. Yeah.
I gave it a report to the same about 187.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are two avenues anyway, but let's look at how we can sleep on it, reflect on that. You wanted to say something else?
I've got a question to ask.
Yeah.
There are instances where people are suspended for 2, 3, 4 years, and their case has never been heard. What happens in a case like that? That person is at home, and we do have cases like that.
Yeah.
2 years, 3 years. Are we saying that that person can't resign and go and find another job? But I think that is something that must be dealt with.
They refuse.
Because we do have instances where people are suspended for at least 2, 3 years.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I think that the situation does exist. I don't think we have seen the situation in isolation. Mm-hmm. If we read it together with the regulations that are now coming out for the compulsion of the sanction of the disciplinary method within a specific time, that would address the issue. I'm not saying it's a panacea, but if it is implemented, we would be able to eradicate the situation that we are
Okay. Any other questions, comments, members, on those issues? Any other that you think we haven't dealt with sufficiently?
requested the department to talk on the judgment that was presented yesterday. What did you say about it?
I think we need a bit tough time because, excuse me, we have to read that judgment. And I think the lawyers, Fani and Vuyo and Dias here as well, from our department, I think we should also confer Baba's a lawyer. The rest of us, you know, we can contribute, but we need them to, and the state law advisor from the side of, and parliamentary law advisor to look at that. It is a stunning, as you said in different words, stunning, excuse me, judgment. And I think that we're not ready, actually, because it came to us from out of the blue yesterday. It does raise issues about our own department. Were you aware of this judgment, Fani? It is worrying, were you? I mean, until Jack Jarpsifisser brought it. This is something we need to talk about internally, actually. This is a big, big decision. It was taken in November, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And our department wasn't aware of it.
Yeah.
So this is something we need to talk about privately. I think we're not ready, really. We can have a browsing, but it won't be an official department view. We're not ready. It'd be absurd for anybody to speak on behalf of the department.
Yeah.
But nothing stops us from having a little discussion here. Because I thought yesterday's discussion was, for me, very stimulating. And for you as well, and for Baba possibly, because we were here when all this, and Pani maybe, those of us who've been here from the 2004 era, maybe Shlabi as well. But I think we can, it's not for me to prescribe, but I don't think anybody can speak on behalf of the department officially. Anyway, I'll speak
on the judgment.
Yeah. Nobody can speak officially, but we can, of course. It'll be helpful because there's so many practitioners here, and the state law advisor is here, and with Daniels, I see. I'm not sure whether he's familiar with that. That stunned us, actually, especially people like Lachisa and Bala and me. So, in short, let's have a discussion. We'd like to hear what the politicians think and others do. It'll help us. But maybe you can prescribe to us what you think is a reasonable time. But it seems to me that when you next meet, which will probably be next week sometime, we should be ready to come back. I don't know whether that's reasonable or what you think.
Committee members who weren't here yesterday, did somebody take us through it pretty briefly just to describe it?
Go ahead. Are you not decided who wants to speak first? What's your story? I haven't done nothing yet. It's coming, but it hasn't happened yet. Let me restate what I said yesterday to make you feel even more comfortable and relaxed yesterday. At the beginning of the meeting, I said, what we are saying as participants in the discussion, this is dialogue. It's our opinions, it's our views, and let's treat them as the truth, you know, as the final story on matters like that. We will have a question to re-express those views. So even if you express them now, they are tentative, you would
you have a right to go and reflect on that and come back and think differently. So it's okay to, because this is an initial examination of material before us. Very interesting stuff that emerged out of the, as usual, this is what happens in these hearings when you invite people from across operating at different levels to spring surprises on you. So that happened yesterday. So it's okay to say you don't have to be substantive stuff. An initial reflection is fine. So please do that.
Well, thank you, Chair. I'll try and give a summary. I think this case, Chair, is about a person who worked for the municipality. I think it's a 1996 case where council made the decision to promote someone to be a manager of legal services. And what then happened in the due process, the province intervened and they appointed the person as an acting MM to investigate some irregularities in the municipality. So when the person was promoted, inquired about that decision because he was notified that the council has made such a decision to promote him. He was told that there's an investigation to that matter. Later, he then went. No, I was not presenting. I've read the judgment, so I'm just trying to give you a summary. Yeah, so what then happened, Chair, is that he then went to court and he won the case. And what the court said is that although in terms of Section 55, Subsection 1, the responsibilities to make appointments are vested in the municipal, in the MM, but the executive powers are vested in the council. So that council decision that was taken long time ago to promote that person, that still stands. So what it means is that, what it meant was that the person must be paid his salary and be back paid and all that. So the municipality lost the case. And what the judgment says is that there's nothing that can be done until the judgment, the decision of council is set aside. And what came out was that the were questions that were asked by the judges to whether the acting MM had an authority to oppose the applicant in that matter, because the decision was taken by council and the council decision has not been reviewed. So that's what we're sitting with now. And what the judgment says is that even though the powers have been delegated to the MM, the executive powers are still with the council. So there's nothing stopping council from exercising those powers, including appointing people. So what you are sitting with now, whether the municipal manager has got the absolute powers to appoint, and the council must not be involved, or the council tomorrow can just sit and appoint people, because anyway, they've got those executive powers. I think that's what is really happening, and it's what they were raising yesterday, to say, clarify whether the head of the administration can decide. Although here it says he must get a directive from council, and our view is that at some point the council can just give a direction to say appoint, and you find that the MM is not pleased with that decision, and what you do in those process, who takes the whole responsibility. And when you deal with the PFMA, when you deal with the MM, you say he takes responsibility for day-to-day activities of the municipality, for MFMA, but on the other hand, the council can take a decision using the executive power to take it. So this is what is really needs to be resolved. That would be all for me. Thank you.
All right. Yes. That's the
story. The authority of council over key staff employment. The degree to which the municipal manager can exercise an authority different from the one given by a council, and that council can actually overrule it. And what are the implications of that? Now, that's what is confronting us. Now, what came out yesterday as well, I think it's important to you, is the prior acceptance of this legislation through the constitutional process
And which is going to have interest in the next step. There is no indication that this decision is being challenged. Any indication, sorry?
Sir, this is a latest case and it's based on the judgment of Mr. Gaba versus his safety and security. Mm-hmm. So, which is the latest case after the Chirwa case. So, this one has not been challenged and still stands.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to check, yes. Yeah. Okay. Any comments that anyone wants to make? Mohammed Baba.
Sorry, Chair. The implications are, if I understand it, and one is that the entire structure of the Systems Act and Structures Act, Systems Act particularly, there are chapters that are dedicated to delegation of powers. If you look at the structure of the MFMA, there is a system of delegation of powers, and there is a distinction, particularly in the MFMA, of the affairs, conduct, propriety, and of administration, the independence, so to speak, for want of a better word, of administration to conduct their own affairs, and the accountability is at that level. And it's based on a system and a series of delegation of powers. I know the MFMA, I can't just quote it, maybe Fani could assist me here, is that even council cannot interfere with the work of a municipal manager in certain areas when it comes to fiduciary duties. What this case does is it flies in the face of this entire series of delegations. It renders many of the provisions in the MFMA, and I may be exaggerating this, but as well as the Systems Act, questionable, legally questionable in the light of this judgment. And my view is, with respect, that this has to be taken up. There must either be an appeal, get a declaratory order, or whatever it is. But it goes against the grain of everything that exists in the Systems Act and in the Structures Act. The irony is, and the ambiguity is, that the Systems Act and Structures Act, the state law advisors assisted us. It was taken to court then by Peter Maria, I think, the Systems Act. The Structures Act was, sorry, yeah. But what I'm saying is that it passed the constitutionality test. Mm-hmm. And so now we have a situation where the Supreme Court is saying something and the Constitutional Court is saying something else. And there's a disjuncture between their views. What is it that we do? But if we lose this one, we then have to go back and say, how do we now run a municipality?
But also, you see, it raises the language and the ethos that flies through the PFMA and MFMA, and then the relationship with that legislation with other legislation here is a critical one. My observation yesterday was precisely that if this is true, then it goes against what the MFA is saying. And it means that staff provision is out of order or something like that. So we need to find a way in which we can chat about it. Just that, at the back there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm sorry I wasn't here yesterday. But
yes.
My colleagues, Asiyahan and Mr. Nabe, were here. And they
yes.
reported to me yesterday and this morning on the discussions that took place
yes.
yesterday. And we have prepared...
You must introduce yourself because...
I'm so sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
I'm Enver Daniels. I'm the Chief State Law Advisor.
Yeah.
My office did, on your instructions, prepare an analysis of the case, and my office is ready to present it. But in reply to Mr. Baba's suggestion
mm-hmm.
that this judgment interferes with or throws everything, the legal and regulatory framework, into disarray,
mm-hmm.
that's the way I understand it. I'm not exactly certain that is the effect of this judgment. What
okay.
the judgment confirms is the following, and my colleagues, Ms. Lampasia and Ms. Nave, will deal with it, is that resolutions taken by a council must be implemented by officials, even if they don't like it.
Yes.
And they can't look for other reasons not to implement it. And so it reaffirms in our analysis of the case the powers of the Municipal Council as articulated in the relevant legislation and the Constitution, to the effect that it has that executive authority, can pass resolutions, and those resolutions must be implemented until they're overturned by the Council itself, and the Council could do that under certain circumstances, or alternatively there's a challenge in court to what the Council did. This case relates to the failure by the municipal manager to implement the decision of the council.
Okay.
So I don't think there is cause for great alarm. Mm-hmm. I don't think so myself. Maybe.
Okay.
But now my colleagues are ready to do a presentation.
Okay. Any other comment before we allow them to comment? All right. Deputy Minister.
If there's consensus amongst them, this is a legal issue and a political issue. We are guided by the lawyers as far as the legal aspect goes. the thing that worried me, I mean, I haven't read the judgment, and I'm not going to really. It's not my job. The lawyers must read it and guide us. I've got enough to do as it is. But the point is that what worries me if Yap, Chris's, it's a pity he's not here, interpretation is correct, right? Is if you look at that last slide, I think it says, unless I'm misunderstanding it, and here maybe Enver and other people can guide us here who are not lawyers, it seems to say that, it talks about the executive authority includes the authority to appoint staff. Mm-hmm. That means everybody from a cleaner, I don't know, to a municipal manager.
Yeah.
That's what it effectively means. Now, there are people who are saying that we should also amend Section 56, which in the original Systems Act said the council must appoint the manager and the senior managers. The reason for that, if our, I don't think Lechisa has gone to the Free State by then, but he's familiar with the MEC at the time. We'll remember, I don't know if Baba in particular, but also I think he was, Fani was with us in processing that bill. The reason, we went for that was because of the necessity to have the appropriate relationship between politicians and senior managers.
Mm.
Secondly, we had decided that nobody should have a job for life. Before 1994, even if you're slothful, you remained in your job as a public servant. So we moved towards at least senior managers having a contract, which means that the council had to play a role in appointing them. Thirdly, we felt that all those people on contract, that means not just the manager, but the senior manager is accountable to the manager for the same reason, should be appointed by the council. Now, what some people are proposing, yourself guys, what I'm interested to see, is that we amend 56 to now no more make it the council that appoints the senior managers accountable to the MM, but the MM does. Myself, personally, I don't have a strong view about that. You know, I don't know what the official cocktail view is, but you know, I don't feel strongly about that. But what I do feel strongly about is that, if that's the correct interpretation, unless I'm getting it wrong, to say that the council has the executive authority to employ all staff means that any cleaner who's appointed by any official above the cleaner is also... if that's be literally understood, doing something that's not consistent with the Constitution.
Mm.
Now, the other way out, well, let me ask the lawyers, well, from my side, for what it's worth. if it's not a problem, then presumably, despite what the Supreme Court said, all we have to do is check that all our legislation allows for delegation. And isn't it clear in the legislation that while the executive authority may well be with the council to appoint the cleaner, you can in legislation allow for the delegation of that authority to somebody lower down in the staff hierarchy who's above the cleaner, who decides to appoint the cleaner? Or are they saying that you can't do that, that the council itself must appoint the cleaner? That's what I want some clarity on.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have the analysis?
Yeah, okay, here.
I said, yeah. So let's go there. All right. And then present that, and then you talk to me.
Sure.
If it's not answered, you have to go. All right.
I just wanted to say, you know, quickly, what one would you know, has interest, you know, to understand because of the absence of uniform titles and designations that are also, you know, used in municipalities. That municipalities tend to use different titles for different people and so on. I think it also comes into play in this particular. It might play a role, but I'm interested to, you know, to hear what the chief legal advisor said, because one municipality refers to somebody as a manager when that person actually is not a manager, directly accountable to the municipal manager. The Systems Act, you know, defines two senior management levels, the MM and manager, directly accountable to the. When you go to Metro, you get a completely different situation whereby you've got your third level managers also referred to as managers. And that, you know, is somehow, you know, goes against the spirit of the principal legislation.
The municipal manager of the municipality
suffers from the policy direction of the municipal council, responsible and accountable for, and then paragraph E says the appointment of staff other than those referred to in section 56A, which in this case is the municipal council. What I just want to say in that regard is what's very important is that this section says subject to the policy direction of the municipal council. It also brings me to the conclusion that the court reached was that the municipal council still has the executive power. And it just reaffirmed this specific case that the municipal council still is the position to delegate any of those powers, which is what they subject to the municipal manager. But to the same effect as my colleague here said, they cannot just merely go and change the decision or the resolution that what Mr. Daniel has also said on that was taken by the municipal council, because they were just performing a delegatory function at that stage when they appointed Mr. Manana. So for them to say that they are not state of promoting any longer because they were the ones appointed him, was in fact not a correct conclusion. So that is why the court then made the order that Mr. Manana being eliminated. And perhaps if I could just also say that this specific case, which is the reason probably why neither of us picked it up immediately, was not reported in any of the law reports. And even on the case itself, it says that it has no presidential significance, which means even though we can refer to it, it doesn't bring in any new constitutional issues. So it is basically reaffirmed for us section 151(2) and the delegatory powers that the municipal council has. So in our analysis of the case, we didn't find anything new introduced that may that our goal that we are dealing with currently may have an impact on that.
Okay. Just for my own clarity, I'll give you a chance. You're saying that if it had the potential to impact on other things, it would be indicated as a precedent-setting legislation. How would it be indicated as such?
I'm curious in what, basically what I'm saying that all cases, most cases being supported, specifically if they've got some form of significance, saying especially to constitutional matters.
Yes.
And this specific case was not the case.
Because, in your opinion, it can only be reported if it has larger consequences.
Kevin, I wasn't necessarily saying that, but the case itself,
yes,
that we looked at,
yeah,
seems on it that it has not been reported. We interpret to mean,
okay,
that the Constitutional Court decision still stands.
Mm. Okay.
Until this specific decision is challenged in a Constitutional Court, and that court finds otherwise. But what this case did,
I think what is central to this judgment, relevant to what we're trying to do, is the provision relating to section 54 of the bill.
And we can't hear you.
That's right. I'm saying the relevance of this case precisely in this matter is the section 54 and 56 of the Internet Bill, which deal with the appointment of the MS.
this case, as my colleague has alluded, does not necessarily suggest nothing new in relation to what is intended to be done by the country. In other words, this case does not say the portfolio committee are about to take a wrong decision here. It's not saying that, but it's saying it reaffirms what is currently existing that says, Section 151, that says the executive and legislative authority of the municipality resides with the council. But the administrative part of doing that part of appointment can obviously be delegated to the relevant people that can do that, which is exactly what happened here. But it does not necessarily say that the municipal council, as the court will say, divests that power. It's not. That power resides with the municipal council. In other words, the municipal council will make resolution, which resolution will be implemented by that manager. So I'm saying this case, as we outlined here, is not necessarily introducing new legal principles. That is why my colleague was intending to say it does not have presidential significance. Because if it had some presidential significance, it would have suggested new legal principles that have been canvassed on this case. But it reaffirms what is currently existing in relation to Section 51, 1, and Section 151, 1 of the Constitution. So I'm saying the copy that we circulated seeks to outline our analysis and our legal interpretation of this, not to say it has to make, or it can make, the committee at ease in relation that they are not moving parallel with the current existence of the law. Thank you.
So just to be confused, that might be why to include in the provision here some clause that would allow the manager to do the job. It's not an issue.
No.
That's why it's your concern.
Sorry, can I just let's just get our context right. It is desirous of the department, and I think the country as a whole, to create a professional administration. I think let's start off with that. In that comes the situation where I take the point that what Mr. Daniel makes, that a council resolution is taken. In terms of the resolution, a power is delegated. Does that mean that every time a council is unhappy on a willy-nilly thing, it passes a resolution to trump its own delegation? And that is the part that worries me. I'm just saying that we need to weigh that. That's the first part. I'm not saying that legally it can't be done. I'm saying politically, is this what we desire? If it is our desire to create a professional public service, the fact that this case took place, there's a gap. And the fact that this is the kind of judgment that took place, there is a gap that we need to fill up legislatively. And that's where I agree with Yap, whatever that gap may be. But I think to come back to our objectives, our objectives are that once a municipal manager is delegated a power, the day-to-day, all corporations are run like this. The board of directors do not interfere with administrative issues, regardless of their resolutions. They can't go and interfere with the CEO. That's how corporate entities and municipalities are corporate entities. That's how they are professional, in terms of the Companies Act. Now, if it is our desire that once, well, I'm talking legally and theoretically, whatever happens, what else ever happens, I don't know. But the point is that if it is our desire to have a professional administration, what is it that we must give the municipal manager, what powers must we oblige a council to give to the municipal manager to be able to run his or her own affairs? Remember, at the end of the day, this is done in the context of a performance contract which a municipal manager must meet. Now, the point that the deputy minister raised when we discussed the Section 5657, yes, there was a desire to ensure that there was some kind of political link between the work and the appointment of municipal managers at the time. My own view, and again, this is not of the establishment, is that that may have worked, be counterproductive. And if the idea is that we want a municipal manager to be able to run an organization and be held totally accountable for that municipal manager's conduct in the organization, and you measure that conduct one of the most prejudicial things you could do to a municipal manager is override the quality of his or her appointments. And that is the issue, because this person's conduct has to be measured. And if that is what I think we need to get a consensus on what we desire. And then legislatively, we need to fill the gap in. Because the fact that this existed, there's a resolution trumping a delegation, then you know what, every time a council is going to sit, pass a resolution to override its delegation, the power that is delegated, and then they're going to appoint cleaners. I mean, I'm a little worried about that. I know the legal implications, but what is it politically that is desired by the committee?
I disagree with your what you call corporate entities and municipal entities. They are not the same. I don't believe they are the same. Theoretically and otherwise, they are not the same. And in fact, I was expecting additional reasons from the deputy minister on the reasons for ensuring that the power and authority lies with council, that it gets, sorry, that it lies with council, that what it delegates to the administration, and so if this proposal you're talking about fiddles with that area, what does it mean? What are you suggesting? Because as it stands, they can be delegated to the municipal manager to do the work and so on. So where's the gap? Are you saying this given this analysis, this piece of thing is saying something different? Where's the gap? Yeah. Let's talk about that gap, because it would be useful to understand it commonly. Your original idea was good. Let's get a common consensus of what the gap is, and let's deal with that gap. Yes, sir. Who are you? Sir, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, sir. I'm Phil Balasad. I'm from the MCOP. I just want to make a comment, because I'm coming from a lawyer position in the innovation sector. One of the issues that we have is that the municipality does not do the Section 53 exercise to determine the roles and functions of council and the council. If you do that,
I'm stumped by two things. Even before he says what he introduced himself as and what he said, I don't understand you, sir. Can you repeat it?
There's a section in the Systems Act that obliges the council sort out the roles and functions of the council and the delegations to the municipal manager and the staff. That, if you do that exercise, then you determine with the council decision who's appointing who's taking which delegation to where. And then you sort out this other thing. I think it's section 53. And if you apply council to that, then you will not move in a position that we are discussing in this.
Okay. You wanted to say something,
Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, possibly some of the concern arises from the fact that we possibly didn't articulate that this case was based ultimately on a grievance that was determined by a grievance committee. And the presiding officer of that grievance committee had made a particular decision in favor of the applicant. The decision of that presiding officer in the grievance committee then had to be considered by the council as a whole, and the council was obliged to do so. And having considered it, the council then decided that it would implement the decision of the presiding officer. I suppose it's no different to a minister having to implement a decision in a misconduct case involving an employee.
Yes.
No different. The most recent one, for example, was the matter involving Sam Yako, which was reported in the newspapers. The municipal manager did come to the conclusion that the resolution was irregular. And in fact, this Supreme Court of Appeals deals with that. It deals with that fully. And I don't know if you want me to quote it. But so all the court was saying is that resolution, once taken by the municipality, has to be implemented.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what the officials may think, but that's clearly stated. In fact, chairperson, no offense, but this judgment is remarkably clear and easy to understand. Then I think
please don't do that to the deputy minister.
I'm not saying it with reference to his comments because I think it's a very good judgment, and I think that's what the deputy minister was saying, because it clarifies a number of things which perhaps we're not too clear on. Then bear in mind, and I say this just in the context of the bill which my office certified, that municipalities do form part of the cooperative governance sections of the Constitution, and that in terms of the Constitution, national and provincial governments also have not just the power, but in fact the obligation to assist municipalities to exercise the executive authority, to exercise their powers and functions, to perform their duties, and it can do that through legislative and other means. And the way we see it as the law advisors is that this is part of that obligation imposed on national government in terms of the Constitution. Yeah.
Okay. These are the lot of things. What lawyers do we do? Firstly, the reason why some of us actually responded the way we did was because YAP generally has a good handle of local government issues, although some in Cocteau feel a certain political principle of mine that he's basically a Selga agent, you know, so to speak. But that's a joke, right? I mean, the minister would say it openly, right? So the minister is very, like, if you tell the minister, is the community law center says, it is, yeah, DM, but you know them. They just say what Selga says, right? So, of course, he doesn't really mean that, but he does half mean it. So the thing that struck me about yesterday's thing, I must say, if I can be open and transparent, and will I ever change, so I'm going to say. But you know, the thing that struck me was, on the one hand, you had Selga saying that let's amend 56 and make it that the municipal manager appoints the MMs. The senior managers, right? And he was saying, hey, look, man, they are saying that no power, executive power, can be divested from the council. Right? So it was like, yet they were conferring and so on. And when Yap presented it yesterday, it sounded so impressive, you know? And yet when we hear from the state law advisors, it's also credible what they say. So I think one thing that I would do, I mean, I can't say what the committee should do, is I'm going to ask Yap via Baba to give us his formulation. Maybe you want to do it. Let's see what he's offering. Because there may be things that we're not seeing. And there may be things that he's not seeing in what he said either. So for me, at least, he's taken this thing so far up, that actually let's see what he's got to offer, Baba. We can, as Cocteau, we can ask him. But the thing that strikes me, if he has wasted our time, then I don't know if the Parliament's got some rule or something to express back the time we're wasting, because then each of us could be doing other things. You must be a good sport. When you fail, you fail, that's all. You should have been more alert than that. No, I thought, JAP was speaking as part of the Good Governance Learning Network. They were also proposing that proposal from Selga about the municipal manager doing that work. So in a sense, it was consistent. So I think he was reinforcing that legally in the way in which he was doing it. So he agreed to make a proposal around that issue. But I disagree with the Daniel there about the simplicity of the judgment. He's talking about himself. Subjective. So we do want you to write it in English to us.
Sure.
And clarify that. We would like to be able to, for general appreciation amongst ourselves, so that we can handle it better. As it stays, it has the potential to send people into cyberspace, as you just noticed now. This was helpful. Any other comments that members would like to make on this? Yes, Chief.
You see, right, Baba, Jackie, earlier versions of the bill, at one stage we did have that the municipal manager must appoint the senior managers, right? And when we took it to the minister, he had strong arguments against it. Now, obviously, Parliament can decide for itself, but COCTA's position is that we want it to be retained as it is. We can't prescribe to Parliament, but that is our position, because we did have that, and Baba and I tried, I think, once to persuade the minister, I'm not sure whether the meeting, but he had very strong views, and he says, no, it should remain where it is. And I think, Chairperson, right, there were many other reasons why we opted for what we did in 1999, 2000 with the dispo. At that stage, you will recall that the presidency had gone towards the idea that all, about 1994, all DGs would be appointed by the political principal. That means the minister would appoint the DG, and then later the president took over that responsibility. And if you're talking of three spheres of government, that is the reason. But there were other reasons as well, quite formidable arguments that escape me now, which is not to say that 10 years later it's necessarily correct. But there were quite formidable arguments on why we did it then. But I'm just saying that that view is COCTA's official view.
Yeah. I also just wanted to say that some of the, I think this has come up as much, that some of the problems are what someone called euphemistically cultural, organizational cultural issues that will not yield to legislative remedy. So we must find political means to deal with it. So that's another issue that we're saying. But I think the lesson also from looking at this legislation is also reading in its entirety. I like the comments you made about if you selectively use paragraphs and so on, which is what lawyers do to beggars as well. A good and priests, they also select good paragraphs from somewhere, you know, and so on. And then they launch a story around those. So reading the entirety of the system is a useful one to see that, in fact, some of these things that we are talking about were anticipated, were provided for, but we are just bad implementers. So if it's not there, we must check it out. If the gentleman says, hey, you're wasting your time, and that thing is provided for, it's in section 53 and so on, if you read that, you get it implemented, there's no crisis. So that holistic looking of the issue is an appropriate one. So part of the generation of ideas that has happened, some of the fears that that were expressed as a result of the legislative initiative, are useful ones. They help us reflect on what's already before us here and so on. So this was on the state law. We agree that the state law people will translate their French into English, and then it will be helpful to us and so on. But also as part of it, it speaks to another element of this thing. The Treasury boasts that the reason why they now have almost close to 90% compliance with submission of financial statements is because of the educational work they did with the legislation. Their interaction with municipalities, educating them, practitioners around it, providing support and so on. So they now have, in fact, this 90% is probably an understatement. They are close to 100% compliance, even if the substance of those financial statements are something else. But the importance of the submissions is because of the educational work that was undertaken. So I think the work that ought to be done with this amendment, when it gets through finally in whatever form, part of communicating is going to be a crucial part of the work that the department has. And so, because it will make a huge difference. You are also, because people raise other issues that they don't know how you are going to be dealing with them. So, Deputy Minister, when you introduced this subject yesterday, but also when you responded, you spoke about how this was part of other pieces of legislation that you intend to bring to deal with some of the problems identified at local government level. But often, because this is the bill that we are talking, this is what people focus on, so they don't get to hear that. So the communication, the interaction with the practitioners around this issue is going to be crucial. Any other issues that people would like to raise that we haven't explored sufficiently so far, any of the proposals that are that you feel we haven't quite explored sufficiently, so that we do that. We're going to come back to these things. You work with us now.
At the risk of being shot down again, as you did before, Mr. Chair, I want to return to 56. Well, you could say that 56A, limitation of political rights of municipal managers. And I'd like us to discuss it further. Just for instance, if I look at 56A1, municipal manager or manager directly accountable to municipal manager may not hold political office in a political party. What's a political party? Doesn't say. It's just the start of it. Okay. Okay, well, okay, in the Electoral Act, but then, and I don't have the Electoral Act in front of me, so can you tell me if, for example, the Nationale Belastingspartalis INI would classify as a political party, and politically, do we want somebody from a pressure group, which may not necessarily fit the definition of a political party, not also to be excluded?
I mean, in an ideal world, we would like an administrator or a person in the administration totally divorced from other interests. But I could be a member of Al-Qaeda. I'm saying furthering the aims of Al-Qaeda. The point is, we can't stop human beings from conducting themselves in a particular way. And that would be in an ideal world. But we've explored all possibilities. Trust me, we've tried to do that. The only one way, because it's not going to stop administrators or municipal managers furthering certain, and it may not be political objectives, it may be other objectives. It may be a priest who's a municipal manager, and he may introduce the precedence of God in the municipality, which is for some people is good. But we can't stop that. The idea is to address it politically. The political parties is not the only political outlet. We understand that. But where do we stop?
Could it not be just extended by some sort of inserting a definition of a political party or a political pressure group or a group that involves itself actively in municipal politics? I think it can be done. Look, I mean, the fact that the step is being taken anyway indicates, I mean, if your argument holds completely, then it's well, why bother at all?
The idea is to stop political parties exerting influence in the administration beyond that municipality or whatever it is. That is one of the issues that needs to be addressed. Whether it's done through another vehicle, that's a very difficult one. And it's going to be tough doing it because the definition of a political party is contained in a particular act and it's neat and it's manageable and one can monitor it. How do you monitor the others? It's very difficult to implement that.
I'm not sure if the member was there when we explained why we have this provision. The aim is, amongst many reasons, to have an appropriate balance of power between the councillors and the managers. Now, even in the situation you speak of, unless that structure, which is not a political party, is a majority in a council, and its office bearers are employed as municipal managers, usually in the remote likelihood of a small civic organization, which doesn't qualify as a political party, becoming a majority, the existing managers and so on will be in place there. And let's talk of the practicalities of what you say. Firstly, it's not the reason, it's not an abstract decision to exclude political office bearers. It's where political office bearers can do the things that they are currently doing as senior managers and so on. The second point is look at the legal challenges in extending the definition beyond the political party. And for practical reasons, unless this committee can come up with a definition that will encompass that, as COPTA we couldn't see the point of going beyond a political party. But the problem really is with political parties.
I could offer a definition.
Let's hear you.
A party means any registered party and any party, organization, or movement of a political nature which publicly supports or opposes the policies, candidates, or cause of any registered party, or which propagates non-participation in any election.
Okay, that's interesting. So why do you think we really need a new definition in South Africa?
The minister thinks it's an unlikely scenario. I submit that under present circumstances it might be, that I don't think there's any reason for us not to consider that it is a possibility in future. If we're going to do it, let's do it properly.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought, but out of legal neatness, to have too many definitions of a political party. You have party for electoral purposes, a definition for this, of the party, and a different one for a different party. It's not neat legally, I would maintain, and politically also it will be difficult to manage. That's my reaction to it, but that's an interesting thought. Any other comments, members? But isn't that, that's not what, you had something else that you said you wanted to discuss on this next.
Yeah, that was extending it beyond just senior managers. Just a municipal manager.
There was a comment yesterday about why the countries are different from the department.
I may have missed that.
No, I understand, yeah.
I'm just saying that I'm asking them whether they can do that.
Can I just start very quickly?
Yes. One is that our constitutional advice thus far suggests that it would be rational, the limited restriction to senior managers. Two is that the senior managers that really have political enormous power in a municipality. Three is that we're saying that if you take it to all staff, you will encounter, beside the constitutional and legal challenges, huge opposition, because many of those people are unionized in whichever union they are. Four is that we think that yes, it is true that sometimes senior executive members of political parties occupy positions below senior manager level. So in that case, not only do they have some leverage over the councillors, they also have leverage over the senior managers above them. We accept that. But our understanding is that that is a minuscule problem. Also, we're saying that if you look at this legislation, you have to see that clause in the context of all the other provisions in the law, in the bill, which are to professionalize the administration. And it's part of an ongoing process. Now, it's not inconceivable that in future, if the problem, we are addressing what we see as empirical and practical problems, which is a response to your earlier question as well, why we restricted it to political parties. If we see that this is a persistent problem down the road, we will have to explore that. But ultimately, you as Parliament will reject it, because your lawyer, the state law advisors and parliamentary lawyers are going to say it can't be done. We also think that
there are a whole lot of other issues that arise. We would like this poll to get consensus among key parties. For example, the South African Local Government Association, SAMU, and so on. And in particular, as you know, the unions are vigorously opposed to this provision. And we're saying also that we agree that the problems that we are addressing can't be resolved solely through the legislation. They have to be addressed by political parties. And we are saying that the majority party, for example, at its major interim five-year conference, National General Council last year, came out very clearly in support of this prohibition. And we're saying that this particular provision may be seen as inadequate, but the test is an empirical one. We think at this stage, people below senior managers, there's very few of them who have that sort of leverage. And we're saying, on the other hand, that it is part of an ongoing addressing of the problem. Apart from constitutional challenges we would have if we restricted every staff member from being active in political parties, which is a constitutional right, it would create too many practical problems. And it would alienate the unions even further than they are. And we think it's important because a substantial majority of the staff in municipalities belong to the unions, Imatu and SAMU mainly. And we just, as politicians, we took the balance of power and we say this is what's practicable, but ultimately it's Parliament that decides.
But maybe Jackie and...
Islakanipo and Baba want to add. Should we cover the whole? I must have left out some issues, because once when I was asked it, I gave 9 reasons, but I can't remember what they were. I've covered about 6. So there were 3 other reasons we had. Because this issue did come up in our consultation with various parties. And we'd had a thorough discussion in the legislative committee when I was there and when I wasn't there. So maybe there are things I've forgotten.
In short, if I have to
summarize, Chair, we are not in principle opposed to what you're saying. So there's no difference. If we could do it, we would do it. But it's not doable. And it's not practicable. And it's not tactically wise at the moment. And there are some issues, like I feel uneasy myself, that, you know, it's going too far, really. We fought for this democracy, for the right of people to have political expression. And only way it becomes a problem to broader national delivery and developmental goals can we, in that very narrow sense, restrict it. For those who argue scrap it, we say, yeah, you know, you want political parties, like Samu's argument is, which is the reverse. Take it out altogether. You're saying, as Selga is saying, Selga's got his own agenda, presumably, which is typical. If I was in Selga, I would also want to do that, because I actually want to denude the power of the workers to actually confront me. So I am sitting as a deputy minister. It's easy for me to say, no, restrict it to managers. If I was a Selga mayor, after these 2 strikes, horrendous strikes, as from the point of view of a councillor and a management of a municipality, and Selga in particular, I would say, hey, no, restrict it to everybody. And it's interesting that one of the arguments I would use is, look who's supporting you, the DA. So you're acting like the DA, you know, if I'm a politician. I'm just talking about how the real world is like, right? I'm just saying to you. So in short, I can understand why Selga feels like it, and in fact, Nipo will feel the same way if he was in Selga, right? Just as Masondo will feel the same way as he feels now if he was sitting in his seat. So we're partly reflecting the vantage point of where we stand from. Let's just, I know there are some things I say because I'm deputy minister, but 24 months ago, I wouldn't have said it if I was sitting in that chair. But I want to tell him that he was sitting here, as I once told him, he'd say exactly the same thing from the vantage point where I am. So in short, I'm not being Marxist here and saying, you know, your outcomes, your attitudes are simply a reflection in the narrow sense of your material circumstances. And this, you might even say my salary circumstances. But the fact of the matter is that I think all things considered, this is the best we can go unless Parliament decides otherwise.
I don't know whether the DM covered it in my absence, but the one area is, if you did an analysis, remember we're trying to retain institutional memory in the municipalities as well. And if we give the choice to workers, join your formations, political or otherwise, or the municipalities, there's a high likelihood that they may continue with their political formations. What does that do to the municipalities? If you do an analysis, and there are very skilled people who've developed a institutional memory organically or otherwise in the municipalities, we may just get the reverse effect and start disrupting the administration. I don't know whether that reason was going, but if we did an analysis with the municipal managers, I know Jackie and I said we went through all the municipal managers and so forth, the disruption is minimal. And the lure of the salary of a municipal manager will allow the municipal manager to lean on keeping the job as a municipal manager and give up the political post. But as you go lower down the rung where the salaries are less and less and less, the temptation becomes less to remain in the administration. I'm saying that those things also have to be considered from purely a functional area. So we don't want to disrupt the administrations either. Although my views may not necessarily reflect that of the DM, I'd like to be very stringent about it and say that separate the two. But there's a reality out there.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, if I may just come back to that. I'm glad you're thinking at that level, but I think that you're wrong. I think that, but nevertheless, we all have our views. And as the Deputy Minister says, we all come from our standpoints. And mine remains, I'm afraid, that I think, if we're going to do this, let's do it properly because there's a principle involved here. And we should go through it. And I realize we all have our own considerations, political practicality or whatever. But from the purest point of view, I suppose, that opposition allows you, I think we should go for a neat and encompassing piece of legislation. But again, the committee must decide.
Any other issues that you'd like to raise that we haven't covered? Members? Okay. What we are going to do, I would like to say what I said at the beginning. Those areas where there's agreement, such as is displayed, for example, in the NETLEC agreement, those areas where there's agreement generally around some of those, the formulation of those clauses, can we have them so that they get incorporated into the draft that we must look at when we next meet, so that when we next meet we look at those proposals of the reformulated clauses, those that require reformulation, clean them up and so on and so on, and then so that we must go for an initial clause by clause discussion of the bill. So can we do that? Can the department agree to do that? You guys have been with us here, you've been listening to this. You negotiated, you said you agreed with some of the role players and so on. So that we will then, at that stage, also then include our own proposals if we have any that are different, if there's going to be any different point around those issues here. Yes.
Chair, I'm not going to take you through that process. I think my colleague will do so. The only one issue that I wanted to clarify, because I remember that Salka also raised that issue of the mandating process, just to clarify it, that we're not saying Salka should not determine their own mandate and so on and so on, but our view is that the minister must be consulted on that particular process. He must not hear from the grapevine that a decision has been taken, this is what is happening, and be called when there's a crisis. Our view is that he must be part of the process and be consulted. I remember one of the issues that they raised was that let the Minister of Finance determine the figure, how much, and I don't think that's where we're going. All that we're raising is that when they work on the mandate, at least let the Minister be part of the process, because at the cabinet level he accounts. It's the same as in the PACPC, we used to do it that way, so that it's easy when you deal with the processes and there's a need for more money. At least the minister concerned is he knows what's really happening rather than just to hear. Thank you.
Is there a language to articulate that will satisfy them? Is there a way to articulate that in the law, if that's where you want it, or elsewhere, that will, because they were arguing for clarification of what is the nature of the beast, meaning of the involvement
Okay, so it's that needs clarifying and so on. And there are a couple of others that are similar, that including SAMU itself was saying, without this clarity, we can't agree. Okay, so we need clarity. We want to know precisely what on earth is your intention. What do you want to do that's not done elsewhere, or that can't be done and worked with elsewhere and differently? So the challenge is that we what those questions helps us is to, they help us with moving towards clarifying things and formulating them in the best possible way that reduces fear that we are concealing stuff that we are not intending to do. Deputy Minister?
Yeah, I think that some of the issues they raised, I don't remember, Jackie, that we thought about in the LC, the Legislation Committee. For example, the point they made, which is something I felt very uneasy about, I must say, Baba, just that I haven't had time to explain it to you in writing. See, they say it is impossible to have a performance contract signed before the person gets employed.
Yeah.
Now, there, I don't know enough, right? But they, for the first time, it struck me that it makes sense to us, to me at least. I mean, we will meet collectively, and in fact, I think we should meet after this meeting ends, if the entire staff can come together to decide how we respond quickly to this. Like, those sort of things, I think, make sense to me, but maybe in COCTA, I'm in a minority, I don't know, which is fine. But, you know, it's Parliament and the side. Those things. Then the issue of the other thing that struck me, Chairperson, is I haven't gone through everything yet, but by tomorrow I'll be ready also to engage with the staff, right? But, like, some of the things on collective bargaining and so on, look, the minister is not above the law. COCTA is not above the law. We have no mandate to amend the labor regulations. I think there, firstly, it's the way we crafted it.
Yeah.
I've been very uneasy. In fact, in one exchange with the minister, there's nothing to hide. When I asked him, look, what are we doing here? You're a former unionist. He said, no, that's not what we're doing. In fact, he said to me, you were with Nslakanipo at that negotiation. See, that's the point he raised with me. Remember, we were together with SAMU, that these things are done. By the way, it's a matter that National Treasury feels very strongly about as well. Now, there, obviously, if we redraft that, we'll redraft those sections and give it to the chairperson and committee, maybe then they can engage with SAMU and so on, and we're prepared to help. Then the other issue is, it seems sometimes SELGA, well, it's institutional memory. I mean, the people who are currently here don't remember that they sat in every committee meeting. They had full speaking rights. They even took part in the majority groups, other structures. And some of the things that are being said here are in the Act as it is. It's under the sections on regulations and guidelines. The minister has the power to do it. And it was wonderful when you came in at section 107 to remind even the chairperson and me, Baba, did you remember that? That actually that is a right. So when I looked at SELGA's submission and also some of the submission that comes from the DAs and the DA and so on, if you look at the bill, it's actually there already. We're not doing anything new. What is happening is we're providing legal certainty and so on. But if we are sliding in things that are new, you're going to catch us out. I mean, your chair is very experienced. He was involved in a lot of this legislation, either as a member of this committee or as a MINMEC participant and so on, and other structures. He was an MEC at the time. So we want to stress that also that where we have taken more latitude than the legislation or constitution, we're interested to engage because we feel that the point that Baba comes back to, and I know the chairperson has taken me on, you might have forgotten, outside this meeting on this thing. When we went to cabinet, there's nothing to hide. There were some members that raised the issue of how far is this actually going? Can you do it? And we said yes. What we are doing is, within the current constitution, I mean, I've publicly said it in meetings, I've been quoted in the media as well on this thing. I said, within the current constitution, we feel more can be done to ensure effective cooperative governance. But the role is mainly going to be dealt with by the provinces, not by the national sphere. The national sphere is going to put pressure on the provincial MECs and the provincial departments of COCTA to do what Section 154 does. So I know that the chair and others have been raising with me outside that you people have gone too far. We're trying to suggest to you, yes, we've gone further than he and I would have done in our PPAs in the past. But we think there's more latitude to do it. We don't need a constitutional amendment. And Baba's done a lot of work around that area, which he can bring to bear also if the committee is interested. So in short, we are saying some of the things are not new. If you look, it's there. All the ministry is saying is going to give effect to it. Previous ministers haven't. And secondly, some are issues around clarity of drafting, as the chair rightly says.
One of the things that we remember in the reasons we gave for referring this thing to NETLAC was to create what we call, rather, to respond to your call for that this legislation is intended to create local public service stability. Okay. So the other reason is that some of the key stakeholders who you have to work with, the mentioning of Treasury and their feelings or their views about this matter, and you didn't mention the public administration that was mentioned around issues of negotiations and so on, as suggested and so on. So it would be useful to, use some of them as soundpeds around this thing, just to get to hear where they are at. We can invite them to ask them those things, but you guys are interacting around those issues on a regular basis. It will just make it easier for us, so that we have a relative comfort that we are covering as much ground as possible around mandating. Let me respond to the Salga story. I can understand why they can be in the committee meetings and agree, come back, get a different mandate. So you're crazy, you can't agree to that thing. We don't agree with you as our negotiator. We realize they've been giving you a lot of tea there and cakes. So it's really about mandating thing. It's important for us to participate in those meetings, but even if we agree, we must almost always remember that we are representing collectives that may not agree with us. So we have to feed back there, and they can take a different view and so on. And also that we sleep over some of these things that we agreed to. We realized that we were talking crap last night. Let's change our views today. So it must be acceptable that they behave that way as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate the lot of work that you are doing around this piece of legislation. This issue has been on our table for a long time. Some of the issues in here, they speak directly to what's happening, what we would like to see to local government, and we hope that it will have positive effect. So let's try and cover those consultative bases as properly as we can in the circumstances, and see that after next week or so, we will be almost nearing wrapping up the stuff and so on. So please, Shireen, you must work with the team from the department and so on, so that we get the staff and communication sharply. Every member here, Dr. Mandela, traditional leaders and so on, short of sending a pigeon to give him messages. We don't know whether he reads email. I saw a fascinating thing the other day coming from Bloemfontein in the plane. I was sitting next to two priests in uniform with their collars in black and reading from an e-reader from Kindle, Amazon's Kindle. This is fascinating. Where's the Bible? From e-Kindle. That's fascinating. So traditional leaders, I suppose, they also use the iPad or something. There's progress there. So let's try and smooth out our communication. Marty and James the new leadership from the UCDP. Welcome. We didn't say so formally. We'd have laid out the red carpet for you here. Come back. welcome back, and thanks, members. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Oh, I should welcome from Kamala. Why did you come? Who
Who said
the evening at 11 o'clock?